You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Guests on the line joining us from, probably one of them is coming to us from Dunedin, the other I'm not too sure where. We'll get more information about the where, but the who, we have the president of the Associated New Zealand ME Society, Fiona Charlton, and Emeritus Professor Warren Tait, coming on to have a korero about new research that delves into the everyday life, the healthy economic outcomes for those suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, also known as myalgic encephalomyelitis. I hope I got the pronunciation. Did I pronounce the condition correctly there, or did I screw up?
That's pretty good, I think, Fiona, isn't it?
Yep, perfect.
Okay, thank goodness. Okay, Fiona and Warren, thank you so much for coming on the program this morning. Before we get into talking about this topic, how are we doing? We doing all good?
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, I have ME myself, so I have to pace myself and so prepare for this interview ahead of time. But I'm doing great. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. My pleasure having
you on. I'm a member of an ME family, but I'm, you know, healthy and well, even though a bit of a dinosaur now, but so all good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great to have you both on the program. I'm sure you can both speak to this issue very, very well. Chronic fatigue syndrome, myalgic encephalomyelitis. When most people hear those terms, when they hear chronic fatigue syndrome in particular, they might think that someone is just tired, but really it's there's so many horrible symptoms. There's physical exhaustion to the point of immobility, extreme dizziness, muscle and joint pain, and other chronic symptoms. Before we talk about the impact this condition has on people who have it, what level of understanding is the general public at with the severity of ME?
I think public understanding is still very low, unfortunately. Quite often when people hear that term, chronic fatigue syndrome, they think it's just about being tired. Mm. But obviously the condition ME, as you say, myalgic encephalomyelitis, it is profound physical exhaustion. And as you said, there are multiple symptoms. We have up to 100 to 200 symptoms because it affects multiple body systems, which Warren can speak to. So this study is just showing how disabling this condition actually is. It's not just tiredness, it's a serious neurological illness.
Warren, do you want to...
Can I just say that... you know, complex chronic illnesses where a person just doesn't get better are very difficult for family, friends and community at large to understand. And I've had experiences, for example, so I've had a young daughter who got the illness at 14 and has now had it for 35 years. And when I talk at workshops and things, people come up to me and talk to me about their experience. For example, a young teenager at a workshop I was involved with in Tauranga came up and said to me that my daughter was so lucky because she had a father like me who understood, because in her situation, her father was just telling her to get up and get on with life. You know? In other words, it's hard for families to understand, and particularly before social media came on, you know, as an ME family, we felt incredibly isolated. So social media, I think, has helped, because families now can find other families who have the illness, so at least between themselves get some understanding and support. But often, you know, friends of families that are affected just tend to withdraw because they're uncertain about the family situation and don't know what to do. And that is, you know, that's quite damaging, really. What I found when long COVID came was that I got contacted by a young, mainly woman journalist who had a school friend or a cousin with this strange illness. And because of the publicity about COVID and long COVID, they wanted to do stories about it. And I mean, that was a great change for me, because they wrote stories and so gave publicity to what ME CFS was all about. But and some of that was very beneficial to me, because after the stories, I got people calling up and giving me funding to you know, for my research to work on it. But one of the disappointments has been that this hasn't been a permanent change. That public understanding has kind of dropped again, and you know, affected people are starting to become invisible again. So that's really disappointing.
Mm. Do you think there's any particular reason why it's going invisible, or is it just because it's gone out of the news cycle?
Well, if I can say for a young person, I mean, obviously with my daughter at 14, she was a pediatric version. I mean, Fiona is, you know, an adult kind of person. There's sort of like two peaks of this illness where it onset, one, you know, an earlier life, and one for particularly women, you know, in their 20s, 30s and 40s. But for teenagers, what I found was that they're not used to things going on forever. And so, and my daughter, she got a lot of support from her friend circle for 2 or 3 weeks. But after 2 or 3 weeks, then it just starts drifting away. And I think it's probably the same with older people as well, you know. They can't sustain that kind of interest and support for a long period of time because it's lifelong for most people.
Well, let's get into talking about the support. There are some pretty stark statistics in this study. I read that 18% of ME sufferers were in employment, which gave me chills when you compare it to 80% of the general population being in employment. Around half of ME sufferers have access to a benefit and have been on one for over 5 years. What support is available to them from the government, from an institution like, you know, MSD or perhaps ACC? I'm not too sure where they get their support from.
I mean, support exists, but it's just not well designed for fluctuating conditions like ME. So they can access the health or disability related benefits. But as the study shows, the system just isn't meeting those needs. So as you said, only half are on a benefit. Many may stay on it long term, but that's because they simply can't work. What's striking is that despite very high needs, only 1.6% actually received the disability support service part of it, compared with 7.2% of other disabled beneficiaries. So in theory, the support is there, but because ME/CFS isn't well recognised, there are people who are falling through the cracks of this system.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when someone falls through the cracks?
You hope that they reach out to the ME support groups for guidance, advice. We have organisations throughout the country who can advocate on their behalf. The problem with people with ME is that we have cognitive impairment. We're extremely debilitated and exhausted. 25% of all cases are actually bedbound permanently. So they need outside help. They need someone who can be there to advocate for them. And so organisations like ANZMES can do that advocacy work. We have support organisations who are there to provide peer support, social connection, because this condition is so isolating, can help them navigate the health system, GP appointments, advocacy appointments with WINS. So there is support there, but it's also a condition that comes with a level of hardship. For people who are on their own, it's exceptionally difficult. You do find that there is a percentage, which this study doesn't cover, but a percentage of people with ME who have been in employment and had to leave, but their spouse is above the threshold for any disability benefit or health benefit. So they go from two incomes to one, which changes the economic situation for that family. So there is a lot of hardship with this condition because, as Warren said, it can be lifelong.
How surprising is this picture of economic hardship with, in particular? Do we know much about the economic and like day-to-day health lives of those living with it in New Zealand, in the New Zealand context?
Well, this is the first time we've had population level data, that, but it confirms what we've been saying for decades. So in some ways it's shocking, but it's not really surprising. We know this from the community. We talk to people living with ME/CFS, you know, all the time, and they've long reported these severe health impacts, economic vulnerability, difficulty accessing the support. What's new is the scale. So for us, this is the first nationwide study using that linked government data. And so it shows clearly that ME/CFS comes with that higher emergency department use, high medication needs, the very low employment, and the very limited access to disability services. So we finally have that evidence to actually match that lived reality that people are experiencing.
Can
I just add a few comments in terms of having been an ME/CFS family now for 35 years? I mean, generally, if it's an adult that's affected, of course, it affects a family earner. It could be a mother or a father. So there's immediate financial stress. And often the well spouse, because of the lack of support structures in terms of social support, the well spouse has to be available for healthcare for the person that's affected. And that means their earning decreases. So, you know, there's definitely a lower income and financial hardship that as a result of. Of course, the person affected in most cases cannot work. I mean, I'm surprised that the study came out with 18%, and I suspect that the people that were accessed that are on in the system are probably some of the more the less severely affected. So I would have said the people that can't work would be a higher percentage than is suggested there. And the critical thing is, you know, people with ME/CFS are subject to frequent relapses. And they generally only have a few hours in the day, small number of hours, where they may be functional. And the person lives like this day after day. So, that's kind of the effects on their lives and the effects on their families. And, of course, if it was, as in our case, it was a young person, of course, families are just shattered when, you know, some young person, you know, a daughter or son, with so much potential is hit with it at an early age, and it just affects their whole life forever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I read that women are more likely to be diagnosed with ME/CFS. Some people say it's because they're more likely to report their symptoms to a healthcare professional, but it made me curious and wonder, what is the gender distribution of ME in Aotearoa, and how does it play out in hardship levels? You know, do women access more support than men, vice versa? What's the go there?
Well, yes, in New Zealand, it is still predominantly female, just like it is internationally. You know, the study's showing that being diagnosed doesn't automatically translate to support, right?
Yes.
So women are appearing more in the data because they're more likely to seek care. But both men and women face barriers, you know, the same barriers. And I think if anything, men are being underdiagnosed. Therefore, what's happening is they're receiving less support. So they still have it. They're just not seeking perhaps not seeking diagnosis. Warren, do you want to speak to this?
Yeah, I would say that generally I think the data is very clear that despite, you know, the fact that women might be more prepared to go to access, you know, health professionals, that there is definitely a female to a male bias, you know, and certainly in, for us in attracting New Zealand patients to do studies on, they're predominantly women. Now, we don't exactly know why that is, but physiology is one thing. I mean, women have hormone cycling, and that sort of thing is quite difficult. It's a stress on their life, and so therefore stress is one of the things that causes relapses in ME/CFS. And I think it may be the genetics of women might make them a bit more susceptible as well. But one of the interesting things is that with pregnancy and breastfeeding, there's a proportion of women that get a significant improvement in their ME/CFS when it lasts. And of course, there's sort of some hormonal stability during that period. But when that stops, then the illness tends to come back again.
I do want to end on a relatively positive or future oriented note. And I was curious, are there any countries that we could look to who provide for their ME population better than we do? Can we look to some, you know, healthcare system or support system internationally that perhaps New Zealand could implement to get better outcomes for those with ME/CFS?
Some countries are ahead. in recognising Emmy, but there's no one country that has it perfect. So we can learn from some places, like in the UK and parts of Scandinavia. They do have clearer clinical guidelines and better diagnostic coding and more consistent coding, which is what we lack here in New Zealand. Some of them do have more established specialist services. But what we're finding internationally is that ME is still under-recognised, unfortunately. So I know you want to let finish on a positive note, but this is why ANZMEs belongs to the World ME Alliance, so that we can actually advocate for international standards, because we've got about 27 different organisations from around the world, and we're all experiencing the same thing, where we're still needing to educate healthcare professionals, we're still needing to educate politicians, and it needs to be recognised that the silver lining of the pandemic was that there's more understanding of post-viral syndrome now. And so that is what we could say is a positive note, despite how awful it's been and how debilitating it's been for millions of people around the world. It has meant that ME has become into the spotlight more, which means there's more funding going into research, more politicians paying attention around the world. The UK politicians in particular are listening and bringing it to Parliament. So there is change on the horizon, I think. But I think what needs to happen here, and what the study is addressing, is that we need to urgently change our systems to understand that fluctuating nature of this condition, the relapse remittent. Because right now, as we've said, people here can effectively be invisible in policy, and we need that to change.
Have we got time for me to add a couple of points?
just briefly, if that's okay.
Good, yeah. I mean, one of the, you know, this illness and chronic complex illnesses have not been taught in medical schools all around the world, including in New Zealand. And I have been teaching a session at Otago University, and I have to say, the medical students are really interested in this now. You know, I've seen a big change. And I'm hopeful that the future doctors will know much more about it. So when patients come to see them, there'll be better management practices put into place. The other positive note is Fiona and I have both been working on this. Is there's a lot of overlapping symptoms, of course, with long COVID, which comes from the COVID pandemic. That's an ME/CFS-like illness, but also fibromyalgia and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And so we've been working and publishing on trying to get a more integrated approach to looking at complex chronic illnesses so there can be better support systems, you know, and this won't just be for New Zealand, but this will be a worldwide thing. At the moment, got an article that's going to be submitted on Monday in Trends in Genetics on this, which is the top genetics journal, to try and get this sort of in the international arena.
Well, that's really great news. I guess there's one more positive note, is that it's an election year, so get your ends with the political parties while you can. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Fiona and Warren. I really appreciate your time. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day. Take care.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
People, that was Fiona Charlton, the president for the Associated New Zealand ME Society, and Emeritus Professor Warren Tait from the University of Otago's Department of Pathology and Molecular Medicine, talking about a new study looking into the economic hardships and daily lives of those with ME, chronic fatigue syndrome.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.